Hello and welcome to Non-Breaking Space, which you can find online at nonbreakingspace.tv. Non-Breaking Space is a show where we'll seek out the best, brightest, and smartest folks on the web and talk to them about how and why they do what they do. Your hosts are Christopher Schmidt and Dave McFarlane, two web designers, authors, and trainers who have a passion for sharing knowledge about the web. I'm Chris from Canada, web designer, podcaster. Christopher and Dave have invited along to help push the record button and keep everyone on track here on Non-Breaking Space. Our guest for this episode is Ryan Ireland. Ryan is presently the Vice President of Technology at HappyCog. He's also the owner of Majingo, a publisher of training materials for web people. Ryan is also the publisher of eInsider.com, a news and information website about Expression Engine. And he's also the author of Expression Engine 2, a quick start guide. So at this time, I'll turn it over to Christopher and Dave in their conversation with Ryan.
Thanks, Chris. Hey, Dave, how's it going?
Hi, Christopher. It's going well. How are you doing?
Doing all right. I'm getting over a little cold flu thing or whatever that's going on, but doing all right.
Goodness me. That's terrible. Oh, my book came out. CSS 3, The Missing Manual.
Oh, awesome. Congratulations.
Yes. Oh, very excited about that.
Yeah, and my book came out too. So
what? What's your book?
Designing Web and Mobile Graphics.
That's who's publishing that?
Peach Pit.
So, sweet.
So yeah, so now we have to go buy each other's books.
Congratulations. Well, can't we just give each other copies?
Yeah, we can do that too.
Okay, let's do that.
Buds, we can do that. Cool. Well, I'm excited today because our guest for today is also an author, a couple times over at least. Ryan Ireland. How are you doing?
Welcome, hey, guys. Ryan. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Cool. Well, we're honored that you're here.
Totally. Why don't you, for people who don't know about you, why don't you give us a little bit of your background and what you do now?
Sure. Right now, as you heard on the intro, I'm the VP of Technology at HappyCog. Sort of background, my education is in German and German literature, and which, of course, you know, makes me overqualified for almost nothing. I went to school on and off for about 7 years and wound up with a bachelor's in German, and then went to grad school and got a master's in German with, you know, an emphasis on German literature, which is pretty much what everybody does. From there, I got into the web I was sort of into building web pages back in the early days when I was an undergraduate. So like, you know, 94, 95. Time period, late 90s, basically. Mm-hmm. And just playing around, I would go to our computer lab at the university and hug two workstations, one that I used to edit code on in whatever command line editor I was using. I don't remember what it was. And the other one to refresh the browser to see what I was doing. And there was, I didn't really have any storage except for the HTML file. Everything else was, I was hotlinking images. I remember hotlinking like an image of somebody backpacking on a mountain or something like that, because I was into backpacking back then. So that's kind of how I got started and, you know, kind of tinkered here and there and then kind of gave it up for a long time. Lived in Germany for almost 2 years and came back and went back to school. And I was always interested in the web. And then when I was in graduate school, as a way to, keep myself sane, I started doing a lot more web stuff and started reteaching myself everything I had learned before HTML and started learning more about CSS and then CSS layouts and really sort of the typical introduction that a lot of people get to building web pages is something I did on the side through grad school. And then out of grad school, I got a job with an educational technology company. I got a job running this blog tool they had and doing all sorts of miscellaneous tasks, really just learning a ton of stuff on the job and ended up working with a really great development team there, web and client application, Windows and Mac application development team, and learned a ton about best practices for web development and any type of development. And how, you know, the whole environment of a developer works, how different tools work, learned about version control and did some Ruby on Rails stuff there as well. And actually still friends with some of these people I worked with today. A couple of them live in Austin. And so really was my chance to sort of learn quickly on the job. And from there, I started working with Greg Story, who started Airbag Industries. That was a blog and then an agency. And he hired me as his first employee in 2006.
Well, how did that come about?
Greg and I had been friends just through, you know, the web. Like, this is back when everybody was writing on their blogs, and this is before Twitter. And, like, you visited people's blogs and read their blogs as, like, and that's how you maintain this, like, circle of contacts online. And so that was what Greg and I, you know, were. We just knew each other through each other's sites and just stayed in regular contact. And then when he went out on his own, I think about a year later, he needed to hire somebody and asked me if I wanted to come on board as in the first position. My first position actually with him was doing project management for a client that he had. And we did project management for them. It was contracted out. So I spent my first year doing a lot of project management work and then moved into, you know, I was doing development on the side the whole time, even before I started working for Greg, and then started doing, you know, more and more development work. And then from there grew into a lead role and then a director role. And then at the beginning of this year as the VP of technology, just overseeing all the technology and development at HappyCock. So so I've, along the way, I've been able to, except for design, really, I've been able to dip my toes in all the different areas of web. And it's been kind of cool. It gives me a nice appreciation for, you know, all the hard work that goes into putting together an entirety of a project.
Excellent. Well, you're also well known for expression engine teaching and being an expression engine developer. Do you still do expression engine work?
I do, yeah. The sites that I run, so I run EE Insider, which is an expression engine news site, essentially. And, you know, that actually runs on Expression Engine. And then in my own site from Majingo.com, which is the publishing, small publishing company I run that also runs on Expression Engine. So I do Expression Engine through there. And then we also use Expression Engine at HappyCock as well. So, I do still get my hands dirty with Expression Engine and, you know, do training and write about it. So yeah, it's definitely still part of my day-to-day, work life for sure.
Cool. Maybe for those listeners who aren't super familiar with Expression Engine or have just heard about it, maybe you could explain, you know, what it is and what it lets you do.
Sure. Expression Engine is a content management system, and it's a PHP, MySQL, CMS that you run on your own server. And it's a commercial app, so there's a license fee involved in using it. And what it's really known for is being really flexible in how you organize your content, so that way you can really model the content how you want it to be using custom fields and you know, a variety of templates that you need. But it's also, that's one of the things it's known for. Another thing it's known for is that it's really popular with web designers or people that don't have any like programming skills or not enough programming skills to dig into, you know, any PHP code at all. So since it has its own template language that you use to set up templates, and the one thing that I really like about it, and the why it's really appropriate for what we do at HappyCock, is because you can drop in your, you know, beautifully crafted HTML and CSS templates, and just, you know, tell Expression where it needs to be involved. You know, you use these tags and wrap the tags around just the areas where you need Expression Engine to populate content. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it keeps your templates really clean. It also, Expression Engine doesn't impose anything on your templates or on your markup. It just, you tell it where to go and it just populates there. It's not very heavy-handed. It doesn't produce, you know, extra divs or extra classes or anything like that. So in that sense, it allows you to really preserve the markup that you created, which is important to us. And that's one of the reasons that's actually been really popular, I think, with a lot of like designers and one-man shops or one-person shops, but also and freelancers, because a lot of these people are doing, you know, everything for every project. They're doing the design, the markup, and the implementation. And it's important that they have a tool that they can use that is accessible to them to allow them to be successful at doing that. And a lot of times, you know, if it's, you know, there's some tools that they might not feel as comfortable with.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, we're definitely at the point where, you know, content management systems are kind of ruling what web designers, even kind of single person shop web designers, are doing. You know, it seems like the day of the sort of static website is over, except for maybe Jekyll, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But, so we've got expression engines, one content management system. And of course, we have Drupal, Joomla, and the big one that a lot of designers use is WordPress.
Right.
How would you compare expression engine to these other sort of PHP based content management systems?
If I was going to compare it to something like WordPress, I would say that Expression Engine from the beginning of the Expression Engine version of the software, because it has a history going back to this version of a software called P-Machine. But from the Expression Engine version of the software, it's always been about flexibility and not being like a blogging tool. I think that's one of the biggest knocks that people have against WordPress, which is that it has this reputation, right or wrong, of being just like a blogging tool, like a very simple entry form blogging tool. And of course, people that use WordPress full time know that, you know, WordPress can do a lot more than that. But if I was going to compare the two, I would say Expression Engine out of the box is set up to not make any assumptions about what you want to do. It requires a lot more configuration out of the starting gate than WordPress does. Expression Engine also doesn't have a thriving theming community, whereas WordPress, you know, there's a large WordPress theming community where a lot of people just, you know, drop in a theme and then they're ready to go, and they have, you know, essentially, you know, a site that's ready to launch. So Expression Engine more is like a framework that you build sites on, than like a CMS framework that you build sites on, more than just like a turnkey publishing tool.
Right.
I would say that it has that similarity than with Drupal, because I think that Drupal has, you know, is similar in that it's, you can definitely drop in, you know, a theme in Drupal and get started. I mean, Drupal is definitely, you know, all about the themes, but the Drupal also, you know, requires, you know, some setup, and it doesn't make a lot of assumptions when you get started with it. I would say that just in my personal experience, I find Expression Engine more pleasing to use than a tool like Drupal, but that's just my own, you know, preference. I haven't done a lot with Joomla, so I can't really speak to that. One thing I think that that people find nice about a tool like Expression Engine is that it has a vast community of developers that create add-ons for it. So plugins, extensions, modules, accessories. And there's a big commercial market for those. So you have a lot of code that is sold and supported. And that's a real benefit. And I think a difference between some of the other systems, where I know Drupal is definitely focused on open source, as is WordPress. And whereas Expression Engine, some people release their stuff for free, but there's a big part of the community that is doing it for profit as a business, but with support and updates and regular, you know, and basically like, you know, you're selling it. And so they, you know, they have the obligation to support it and to update it. So those would be the big differences between the tools. I mean, Expression Engine is much, much smaller in terms of community and imprint on the internet than, I mean, WordPress is, you know, like you said, it's just massive.
Yeah, it seems kind of weird. Like, WordPress has a really great theme, community, and industry, and whereas Expression Engine has a really great, you know, developer add-on, like kind of community and a niche industry and so on. So, and has there been any inroads to build sort of like a theming, not niche industry or community within Expression Engine?
There's been at least one attempt that I know of. A few years ago, Woo Themes, who they're big in the WordPress theming world, they created and then attempted to sell and market Expression Engine themes. And I believe maybe after a year or so, they kind of shut that down. I don't think it, you know, it just wasn't very fruitful.
It took off, yeah.
Yeah, and that's just sort of that's nothing to do with, it had nothing to do with Woo, because their themes are actually really nice.
Yeah.
It had everything to do with just that the people that use Expression Engine aren't typically approaching it as like, I need to theme something. You have like I said, freelancers or small shops or even, mm-hmm. you know, larger shops that are doing a soup to nuts build of a website for somebody.
Right.
And they are controlling every aspect of it and they're not interested in a theme.
Right. So with Expression Engine, if you just install it, is there nothing really there? I mean, like, you know, like WordPress, it's got the famous, you know, 5-minute install and suddenly you've got this blog for whatever it looks like, maybe not great, but you could start adding content. With Expression Engine, you install it. Do you also then, you then have to do a bunch of other stuff to get templates built or?
Yeah, exactly.
So you don't just drop it on and there's nothing if you just install it. You have to go a further step and start to define your HTML and that kind of stuff.
Exactly. So when you install Expression, you do have the option of installing a sample site called, I think it's still called Agile Records. And I want to make sure that's correct because I don't actually install it ever. But there's a sample site you can install that sets up some channels for you. Channels are sort of like, you know, the content areas. And it sets up some channels and some custom fields and stuff like that, and it gives you an idea of how everything works. I always encourage people new to Expression Engine to install that when they're first using Expression Engine, not to actually use what is installed with that Agile Records sample site, but just so they can click around and start to understand how things are put together. But if you're just starting a site from scratch and you want to, you know, build a site for your local, you know, accountant or whatever, you wouldn't. There's nothing. You have to start from scratch. You have to create all of your templates, all of your channels, all of your fields. Everything has to be created.
Right.
You don't get anything. And that's actually the nice part of it because you're not inheriting anything that needs to be stripped down.
So Expression Engine, it's a commercial product, right? It's like
correct.
$300 and that's a single license. So each site is a $300 fee. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. It's a one-time $300 license. And then there's support costs that go on top of that. If you opt to do like a paid support model after, I think it's a few months or something like that. I forget what they're offering with the new license. Mm-hmm. But it's a one-time fee. It's not like an annual fee or anything like that. It's just one time.
How does it scale? I mean, how big of a site does Expression Engine, does it start to feel the pain at a certain point or?
If it's not coded properly, then definitely. I mean, like anything else, it could definitely feel the pain. But it's Expression Engine. If you Google like top, like biggest websites running Expression Engine, mm-hmm. somebody put a post together that they keep updated, and that list out, you know, some of the biggest websites running Expression Engine. You know, one of the ones that I'm not sure if it's still on the list right now, but it used to be that I helped work on the original version of it being on Expression Engine, a List Apart magazine that. That was started by Jeffrey Zeldman one that runs Expression Engine that is up there on the list. I don't know if it still is because as more people adopt Expression Engine, you know, other sites get pushed down. But sure. It was at one time. But even, you know, back in 2008, 2009, the Obama administration's what do they call the transition government group? That used Expression Engine as well. And that got millions and millions and millions of hits. And this is where people were submitting like ideas and stuff like that for the Obama administration. This was after the election, before the inauguration. And so there's like that list there. I don't have it in front of me, but there's a bunch of websites, a big websites that run Expression Engine. There's a lot that we also don't know about because they're not allowed to say that, you know, what they're running. For obvious reasons.
And you can, unlike WordPress, it's kind of hard to, it can be hard to hide, you know, that it's a WordPress site. You know, if you look at the code, you can uncover that. With Expression Engine, it's pretty easy to obscure its identity.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, because you're in control of everything in the template. Everything. And I would say even, I'm not a Drupal expert, but I would say even with some Drupal sites, you can probably tell that they're Drupal as well.
So let's talk a little bit about PHP frameworks because EE is built on PHP. Is there a framework behind Expression Engine?
Yeah, it's built on the CodeIgniter framework, which is also by the same company, Ellis Lab, who makes Expression Engine. I think if I remember correctly, it's running off like its own branch of mm-hmm. CodeIgniter, but a lot of the stuff that they build for that they have to add to CodeIgniter to do something with Expression Engine, I think the idea is that they roll that back into the main branch. So that way, you know, everybody gets the benefit. I would say that the general, the feeling that I get from developers right now is that there's a lot of other PHP frameworks that are moving forward faster than CodeIgniter. And so you see a lot of people dropping off to use other frameworks. And also a lot of people just switching to use, you know, there's also like things like Laravel. So you see a lot of people moving over to that. And a lot of people switching, you know, to different languages. A lot of people moving to like Python and Django. But I think CodeIgniter is definitely still, I mean, as long as Expression Engine is around, CodeIgniter will be used. And you know, I've used CodeIgniter for quite a few projects, and it's perfectly fine to, you know, to code on.
Right. So do you have you experience with some of these other frameworks? There's like CakePHP, and you mentioned Laravel is like sort of the new kid on the block. Do you know much about Laravel and what it is and how it's different than CodeIgniter?
I have not worked that much with Laravel to be able to speak to some of the differences. I haven't used CakePHP in years. I've really been using CodeIgniter if I'm doing PHP stuff and Ruby on Rails or Sinatra if I'm doing Ruby stuff. So I haven't really spent a whole lot of time with Laravel just yet. But it's on my list for this year.
To learn?
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like every week there's a new framework coming out, but this one's got a lot of buzz, so.
Yeah, and I'm not really big. I mean, I like to, and part of my job is that I need to, you know, keep up and understand sort of what the changes are. But I don't want to, just always be shifting with the winds on, you know, on technology, because that's just a trap that you get into. Yeah. And then one, you're just never good at one thing.
Right.
And two, you're also, it gets really confusing to maintain the work that you did before if you have moved to something else. So when you're doing client projects like we are, we have to be, you know, very conscious and very steady about the technology we choose, because we want to make sure that we're not, you know, just, you know, switching here and there. We're always open to trying new things. But, you know, if, you know, that's why we've used Expression Engine for so long, because we trust it, we know it works, and we can easily predict the amount of work it's going to take to do something in Expression Engine.
Yeah, certainly. And it's been around a long time. It's got support. It's got a community. I mean, I checked out Laravel and I was like, wow, this looks, you know, shiny and new and exciting. But, you know, from my brief look at it, you know, there's one developer who sort of spearheaded it. And I'm always extremely leery of any project that's like one developer who's sort of, you know, behind it, unless there's a team or a community that's going to support it in case this person, you know, takes off or his wife has a baby or whatever.
It's definitely, you know, in its younger days right now, they're just organizing their first conference for the fall. And so they're starting to grow the community. And I know that Ian Landsman, who runs HelpSpot, his company brought on the developer and took on the framework as well to support it. Mm-hmm. So the developer now has like, you know, some, I don't want to say like money behind it, but like he's being paid as part of his job to work on it. So I think that's helping, at least in my eyes, you know, as I go down my checklist of looking at technologies, that, you know, that means a lot in terms of its stability.
Yeah. So let's switch gears. Let's talk about Jekyll. Cause you, on your Majingo site, which we'll talk about in a little bit, you have a learning podcast type of thing about Jekyll. Why don't you explain to people what Jekyll is? People seem to be talking about quite a bit these days.
Yeah, there's been this weird movement to, I mean, it's not weird at all. It actually makes sense to get back control of the content you publish on the web. And for anyone that has been through, you know, three or four migrations from one blogging tool to another, I know that my first blog was on Blogger. Mm-hmm. FTP to my university account. and like, you know, at like a, I went to the University of North Carolina. So it was like a unc.edu/tilde and then whatever my username was. Right.
Right.
So that was my first blog. And then it moved to movable type. And then I moved to WordPress. And I think I was may have been on Text Pattern somewhere in between there. And so I've, you know, moved content over and over again. And you start to realize that unless you're really, really good at doing, you know, direct database migrations. You know, if you're, you can write the queries to directly migrate the data over, or someone has built a tool for you, it's really easy to have to have your content get degraded as you move systems. It's very much like, you know, copying one cassette tape to the other, where, you know, things will get degraded because you'll lose, oh, like this thing doesn't do categories. Oh, this thing, you know, this one post won't come in, or this post has all these funky characters in it now. And so there's this degradation that happens. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. I think what people started to realize was, if I put everything in text files, the chances are that text files are going to last much, much longer than any of these content management systems. I'll always be open to this text file. And if I use something like Markdown, which is, you know, a very, you know, human readable, you know, Markdown syntax, chances are that that's going to be fine too. Even if the Markdown processor, you know, goes up in flames and nobody can find it anymore, and John Gruber has run off to the corner of the earth somewhere, then I can still read these files and they're still meaningful. Like everything is still means something and they're still readable. And they realize that then they have like these much more future-proof, much more future-proof content than they would if it was stored in any of these other MySQL database or other database power tools. And so that's sort of where this, I think this whole Jekyll movement comes from. It's this whole, it's the same thing that drives people to, you know, get really fanatical about backups and stuff like that, because they realize like, hey, it's 2012, 2013. And like, you know, I have so much of my life in files now, I need to start being careful with this stuff. And that's what drove me to use Jekyll as well, is that I have all these years, my blog, I think it's like 11 years old or something like that. And, you know, I care about all that content. Not all of it's great, but I care about it. And I wanted it in a system that I knew I could just print out, you know, I could just print all these text files if I had to. And so that's why people move to Jekyll. So Jekyll is a tool that basically takes Markdown files. And I don't think they specifically have to be Markdown, but I use Markdown. So they take text files, some templates, and it uses the Liquid templating language. And it basically is a processor, and it processes those and spits out a static HTML site. Every single page of the site is spit out as an HTML file. So it's like old school. It's like we've come full circle all of a sudden.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of crazy how, like, because the CMSs, if you will, the tools for building web in the 90s were all about, like, you had to put all your content into a system, and then it would output static files for you, like, you know, like NetFusion, I believe it was the tool back in the day.
Oh yeah,
Think about what Movable Type did, right? I mean, that was the whole thing.
Right.
Movable Type, you had that, you know, it was building and generating all the static files every time you made a change. And Jekyll does essentially the same thing. You can run Jekyll on a server if you want, but I think most people run it locally, and then have some sort of deployment mechanism, whether that's just like manual FTP or up to a server, or if they're using a deployment tool like Capistrano or whatever they use. But it's, you know, I run it locally, and I just have a Git repository that has all my Markdown files and my templates. And when I write an article or a post, I just, you know, just type Jekyll in the command line, and it builds my site, updates my RSS feed, and then I just push that out to the server. And then the next time someone's RSS reader pulls my my server, then it sees that the file has been updated. So it's pretty cool. It's a great way, and it's super fast because it's all static files. And there's no database, which means I can very quickly move from one server to another. It's not this big migration thing.
Right. Well, then also GitHub, for GitHub Pages, actually processes all the, like, so if you use GitHub Pages, they use Jekyll. So if you actually use Jekyll, you can actually pretty much have your blog hosted by GitHub or sites.
And that's where Jekyll came from. It was built to power GitHub Pages, and then they released it as Jekyll.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. What's the underlying technology? Is it Ruby or?
It's Ruby, yep. Uh-huh. And it's just really, it's a Ruby gem, you know, gem install Jekyll. It'll grab all the dependencies. You might have to add a couple others in depending on what Markdown processor you want.
Right.
But it'll install everything, and then you just go in and set up your templates. And in that video, I just kind of walk through the really basic process of doing that.
So once you're done, I mean, the basic process of putting out content is you start up a text editor, you write a document, then you go to the command line to type Jekyll. It will spit out your site, and then you FTP or deploy it however you do want to up to your server.
That's it.
Cool.
Yeah, and so you can write, and you know, I run like a local version of the, you know, of the site on my laptop. So if I'm on a on an airplane or offline, I can write anywhere, or I can write on, you know, I know some people that have done this thing with where they do it with Dropbox, and they have the Dropbox client running on their server. There's a server version of it that you can run, right. And they just save everything into Dropbox, and then anytime there's an update, you know, it gets updated on the server automatically. So this is actually like a seamless process. To that extent yet, but you can, it'll, you can do like a test run, and it'll tell you, you know, which, it'll give you like a little list of which files have changed, and then it only updates those.
All right, cool, great. So the biggest hurdle really is installing it, and if you're not like a Ruby person, that might be a little bit of a hurdle, and then working out your template so that you've got a good look, and then once that's done, it's basically just writing text files, letting Jekyll do its thing and uploading the files to your server. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yep.
That was kind of one of the, I thought that was one of the complaints though about in the early days of which one was it that you were talking about, the blog system where you would basically generate static content?
Movable type. Yeah.
Movable type. Wasn't that one of the complaints? Is that, oh God, it's so slow. I've got to regenerate my whole site every single time and then upload it every single time. Isn't there something better?
Yeah. And you know, and it can be slow if you have a ton of content, because like as an example, if you have like a listing of other articles or something like that, or previous articles on each right. entry page, then each of those entry pages have to get rebuilt every time you add an article. And so you know, my site isn't that huge, so it doesn't take that long. And what I did is when I moved to Jekyll, I didn't actually migrate everything over yet. It's, again, like many things, it's in the plans. But I migrated over some things, and then I kept a snapshot of my old site. I think it's at like archive.ryanarone.com. Mm-hmm. And then that's just there now as a placeholder. And then when I have the time to write the migration scripts to move everything over, then I'll just move it all over as markdown files. But there's so much, like I said, you know, there's this degradation over 10 years that there's all sorts of markup embedded in the sure. post and all sorts of junk. Yeah. It's just a nightmare. So I wish I had just written text files 10 years ago.
Yeah. But it seems like the use case is mostly for a very simple site. It might be deep with a lot of content, but, you know, like a blog where you're not having multiple designs, for example, for different types of content. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say that's probably the best way to approach it. That's the only type of site I've done. I think if it starts to get really crazy, then you run into the problem that it becomes really difficult to manage. Yeah. And one of the things that, and this is just comes from me sort of building so many client sites, is that, you know, not only do you want the site to look nice, and do you want the people that are using the site to have a good experience, but you also want the people managing the site to have a good experience.
Right.
And so if you make it like a real, you know, crazy way of managing the site because it has to be text files, then no one's going to want to manage it. And that's where tools like Expression Engine, WordPress, Drupal, you know, that's where they come in, you know, because you want it to be easy to use.
Cool. Well, why don't we switch gears? Let's talk a little bit about your other project, Majingo. Why don't you tell people about what it is?
Sure. It's a funny name for a small publishing company I have that puts out screencasts, and we even have an ebook, and also does classroom training for started out just doing Expression Engine stuff, but I have stuff on Expression Engine add-on development, Jekyll, Evernote, and I'm trying to think what else is in there. There's some Python stuff in there now. We're actually working on something for Django. So it's just a training site where you can go to get videos to learn how to do something new on the web. It started out in 2008. I did a series of videos for the Pragmatic Programmers. I'm sure you guys are familiar with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're a great publisher based in Texas and Carolina. And they did this whole new screencast thing. And one of my friends, Mike Clark, was leading up the screencast effort and asked me to do some stuff on Expression Engine. I had already been, you know, I was already under contract with them to do my book on Expression Engine, but I was waiting for the new version of Expression Engine to come out before I could continue writing it. So we did these videos in the interim and put them up for sale, and it just went gangbusters. It was insane, and they, you know, they sold really well. Sort of filled a hole in the community for that type of training material, and also hit at a time where Expression Engine was really starting to get really, really popular. Mm-hmm. You know, in comparison to where it had been before, and it did really well. So I followed that up. I sold those videos through Pragmatic for a couple of years, and then I followed it up with in 2010 with this Majingo site. And I redid the videos for Expression Engine 2, and started selling them on my own. And then shortly after that, we released an ebook by Mark Hewitt called Securing Expression Engine, which is a short ebook that goes through, I call them ebooklets, that goes through the best practices for making sure you have a secure setup for your Expression Engine site. And then from there, I just started adding new products as I could, as time allowed. You know, I did it all on, you know, evenings and weekends and on vacation and all sorts of stuff. But it's been a great business, and it has helped a lot of people learn Expression Engine and other stuff. And it's great to see people, you know, get excited or have that light bulb moment from seeing the videos. So it's been through, you know, it was originally through a publisher, and then I took it out on my own. Mm-hmm. And a really simple model in terms of selling it, I use this service called FastSpring, which is a hosted e-commerce system. And I had everything on my site, but then pushed off to FastSpring, and you can skin the site so it looks just like the Majingo.com site. And that way I didn't have to handle the cart system and the payment processing and all of that. They just basically direct deposited, you know, the money into my business account twice a month. And so that was cool to set that up. And then in last August 2012, I took that next step again and actually pulled all the e-commerce in-house. So I run all of it off my site now. And it all runs Expression Engine. Cool. It runs this module called Store by this company called Expresso, and you know, it uses you know, your standard, you know, authorized .net payment gateway, so I can process credit cards. I can also take PayPal, and that's all handled in Expression Engine. The products are stored in Expression Engine, the customers are stored in Expression Engine.
Cool.
And all my reporting and everything is all in Expression Engine, so it's all sort of self-contained. So that's the kind of things you can do with Expression Engine, not just for publishing content. You can do there's three great e-commerce options for Expression Engine L2.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you also host the videos, so you have some kind of access control to all your video content?
For the streaming or for the downloading?
I don't know.
So I just added, I don't know if you're, I added recently streaming. So that way people, when they log into their account, they could, they have the option now to download or stream the video right on the site.
Okay.
And that's, and I use the Vimeo Pro service for that, which is a great Vimeo service that's really affordable,
right,
and also lets you customize the player. So it's not branded by Vimeo anymore. You actually can brand it yourself. But you have that great Vimeo backend supporting delivering the videos, and you have the great Vimeo player, which works like on every device almost.
Yeah. Cool.
And then the downloads and stuff are all handled through another, it's all handled in Expression Engine through this other tool that lets me track any abuse of downloads, like leeching. If someone shares links out and stuff like that, I can track that.
Cool.
It also requires, you know, that you're logged in to download and stuff like that. So yeah, but I handled all of it myself.
Sweet. Oh, that's awesome. I love it.
So how many years of development has it been since you started in the beginning to where you are now?
As the Majingo site, it's been like 2.5 years since I first built it. And when I first built it, it was literally like a couple of pages. It really wasn't that much to it.
Right.
But I just slowly, you know, added new stuff. And I really try to take the, when I first set up Majingo.com, I said, you know, my goal is to sell these videos. Mm-hmm. My goal is not to like build this big e-commerce solution. Like that wasn't like, I was more than happy to lean, to swallow my pride as a developer and lean on a third party to do it and pay, you know, more money to make that happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But it allowed me to focus just on the content and the products at first.
Right.
And then as time went on, I realized that I had to take more and more of that on board.
What's the plugin that you use for the controlling of the downloads? And
it's called Link Vault. And it's by a company called Masuga Design. And it handles, you know, generating the links and letting me control, you know, access and preventing leeching and all that stuff.
Cool. And that's, it's called Link Vault, like links?
Yeah, Link Vault, yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
That's awesome. How are you doing with this? Is this just kind of a small side gig, or is this something that you could turn into a business that would support you?
It has definitely turned into a business that could support me.
Cool.
It's done really well. I think that's the expression engine space has been a little bit of a bumpy ride in the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely has done like way better than I had expected. But the great thing is that, you know, other than creating products, which is, you know, a lot, I mean, you guys write books, you know, that, you know, teaching anyone anything is a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And the main thing I have to do is supporting customers if they have problems with downloads and things like that. Right. So there's not a lot of work that goes into it. It comes and goes in spurts. You know, if I'm working on a new product, or if I am building out a new feature, you know, I might have like a couple weeks of really intense, you know, work, and then I can back off of it a little bit and have a more normal life. But you know, there's no getting around the fact that if you do something like this and have a demanding full-time job that you you work a lot.
I bet. Cool.
I do want to talk about a little bit about the content, because like you, I was very passionate about. We went back and did some research and found out like one of the things that you are passionate about in terms of your content and writing these materials or like working with other authors for them is that you want to make sure that the content is geared for techies, if you will, or like, you know, developers, but also for people who, you know, are coming in at, you know, kind of a beginner level too. You want to make sure it's like open for both. And, you know, do you still try to find that with Majingo stuff that you do work with?
I do. I would say that most of the stuff is probably like an intermediate level.
Mm-hmm.
Where, except for the Expression Engine series, which is this 4-hour series over 8 episodes, so 8 videos, where you can learn Expression Engine, like that, you don't really need to be really technical to use it. I mean, you need to be comfortable with HTML and CSS, just in terms of getting around it, so you know where to place tags and stuff like that.
Right.
But you don't need to be like a hardcore developer. A lot of people that pick up the video pick it up because, you know, somebody, you know, built them a site and they just want to know more about the tool that was used to build that site.
Right. Yeah.
But everything else, except for the Evernote video, is probably more like an intermediate level.
Mm.
Basics of Markdown, not really as much. You know, the Markdown mm-hmm. video I did, that's pretty approachable by anybody. The Evernote video is also really approachable. A lot of all sorts of people buying the Evernote video, a lot of professionals, non-technical people,
sure.
business people buying the Evernote video. So it's a little bit scattered, but the focus is basically on people that are doing stuff on the web, whether it's building, you know, sharing, marketing, or whatever. That's who I'm trying to go after here.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it's really awesome that you're trying to do this. And I think it's just really great. I like the whole lunch with series, like as you just make like little screencasts and like the Jekyll or that, so that you just quickly get up to speed with it. You know, you have like the, like you said, with the Expression Engine, you know, people just want to buy it just so they know what the technology is. But I also see where people just say, like, you know, a colleague of mine just mentioned Jekyll and I have to go figure out what Jekyll is. And so it's a really great way of just, you know, getting up to speed and get some good general working knowledge of what's going on.
Yeah, I didn't want to, I did that, one, because I always thought that, you know, a lot of people probably, like, on their lunch break as they're eating, you know, a sandwich at their desk, they, a lot of times, you know, might want to have the opportunity to use that time to learn something. And I didn't want everything I created to be a huge time investment, like, you know, 4 hours or whatever. And so I was trying to create something really focused that people could, you know, just, it doesn't have to be anything super serious. It could be, you know, like learning Markdown, which is not like very technical, right? But it could be something that you could just do while you're having lunch. And so that's why I created this lunch with series. I think it was like back in the like fall of 2011 that I created it, and I have a couple of videos on OmniFocus too, that cover that. Even this thing on Solver, which is a free video. So it's a cool idea. It doesn't have as many products as I would want it to have right now. But it's a fun series to do for sure.
I mean, have you any plans? Like, has there been any like roadblocks in terms of when software updates, like Expression Engine comes up with an update, or do you have to find they have to go back and touch it up, or do you just release like an add-on pack or a new version? Or
I will typically wait until the videos no longer serve my customers well. So if there's like, there's always small updates to Expression Engine, and because the videos cover core concepts, is that those core concepts rarely change in Expression Engine. So the videos have a long life, but sometimes we'll make significant updates. Like in 2011, they made significant updates to like the file manager and a couple other pieces, and then the interface was refined. And so it made, like, I had to update my book too, but it made sense to also go in and update the videos. But as long as the content is good, I don't update the videos because they're 4 hours long, and it's hard to go in and cut, and edit in like, you know, something different.
Right.
They're on my agenda for the first part of this year to update again. And I typically in the past, I've just dropped in the update as a replacement. So it's not like an upgrade that people have to pay or anything like that, because, you know, I'm not really like upgrading the amount of information I'm giving them.
Yeah.
I'm just updating to make sure it's still is still relevant.
Right.
But I know that some people do like add-ons, like, hey, like this and this changed. That seems like a really disjointed way to learn, so I try not to do that.
Okay. Cool. Well, I do want to switch gears a little bit, and I want to talk about something that, you know, I noticed also in researching for this interview, is that you really are interested in workflow and processes and trying to get them a little smoother and refined as much as possible. And would you say that that's the case? Like, that's how you, like, one thing to do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always up for nerding out about that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, if you're referring to using, you know, tools like, you know, Text Expander and I really like to use Keyboard Maestro for certain things on my Mac, you know, which is just tools that, you know, they're not really like, I'm not generating like these huge workflows with them, but they're just make like day-to-day tasks just really easier for me. So I'm definitely into that, if that's what you're referring to.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about that as a way of saying, like, I was like reading your blog as well. It's like that you've given up reading RSS feeds.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, wow, holy cow. Well, one, like most people, I think, sort of the web just don't know what RSS means or whatever. Like, they're just like, they probably just see the orange button on their websites and like, you know, subscribe or whatever. They have no idea what that means. And, you know, Apple got rid of the RSS button in Safari. So, you know, that's kind of gone. So, what was the impetus to get, you know, like just to get away with that? It was just that, just to refine your kind of productive, you know, improve your productivity for the day, or?
Well, what I found was that I was idly flipping through the RSS feed and never really like when I was done, like I didn't really get very much out of it. And so I decided that like I probably didn't really need to do this as much. Since then, I have kind of gone back and forth and started to look at, you know, RSS feeds and then not look at them. Now I launch my RSS reader at the most once a week. Mm. But so much of what you can find now, like you just let people sift the stuff for you. It's actually really nice, especially on Twitter.
Yeah.
There's so many ways of finding things now that don't require subscribing to 800 RSS feeds. So I don't do it as much. The one thing that I do it for sometimes is to monitor things about Expression Engine. So I have certain Google searches that I have RSS feeds for and things like that. And every once in a while, I just go through just to monitor that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But even now I have, this guy, Kyle Cotter, who writes the news on EE Insider for me. And so so he does a lot of the sifting of Expression Engine related information now. So I'm not having to do as much of that. But I don't hate RSS, but I certainly don't use it quite as much. It honestly just felt like if I didn't do it a lot, I ended up with all these unread items, and I would get anxious, and then and I decided that wasn't really a fun way to go, so I just stopped. But I'm not I'll open it up every once in a while. Only because I really like using the reader app. I just think it's pretty. So
are there any other software, like small pieces of software that you like that helps speed up your day?
The two I already mentioned, Text Expander is really, really big for me. Mm-hmm. I use it for everything from creating just, typing out today's date. We just went on vacation or on a trip to Florida, and I have to print out some instruction list for our pet sitter for our cat. And I actually have this fill-in form through Text Expander that has the pre-filled information that I can just drop in the dates and any other additional information. And then it populates that into a Pages document, and I can just print it out. So it's customized, but I don't have to type it out every time. So I do stuff. Nerdy stuff like that. Keyboard Maestro lets me, lets you automate different things. It lets you, put together different keyboard commands to make things go faster. There's my note text editor would be this app called NV Alt, which is a fork of Notational Velocity, and it's a really simple text editor that lets you easily search for and create new text files. And I sync it all with Dropbox. So it's available on through this other app I use on my phone called Notesy. So I can, always have these text files going. And I have all sorts of stuff. I think I did a video on Majingo on the blog about grocery lists and stuff like that, how I use it to track grocery lists. And I have grocery lists going back 3 years, and I can just search. cool. Yeah. So NV Alt is a big one. And I use this tagging system for it that I cribbed from, I think it was Merlin Mann was the first person I heard talk about it, where I just, in the file name, I just do a tag groceries X. And what it does is because it has the X on it, that it'll always, you'll always be able to find it by that tag. And then it gives you a list of all the entries that have that that tag. So that's a really cool. That's my go-to thing for meeting notes. I keep running meeting notes for different parts of my job, and in NV Alt. So that's a big one for me is NV Alt on all my devices. It's pretty critical to me. So much so that if it's not in there, I get really lost. I'm trying to think. OmniFocus is another tool that helps me keep my stuff together and know what I need to do.
What's your what text editor you use for development?
These days I'm using Sublime Text. I switched, I guess, last year from TextMate, and it's, you know, it's great. I don't get real passionate about that stuff.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, I like to use things that I think are enjoyable, and I found it really enjoyable to use. I also really like TextMate. Yeah. But I like my ability to customize the look of Sublime Text too. I have like all black, you know, sidebar and text editor area.
Right. Cool.
But yeah, but I'm not like, I don't get like religious about it. You know, if I have to type in, you know, another app I love is BBEdit, I will, I don't care. And just trying to think, I think the only other big tool for me, or two more, one is 1Password on my Mac, which lets me store all my passwords and stuff.
Yeah, I use that too. I'm looking for an alternative though. I'm not super happy with it. It's kind of slow once you get a lot of passwords in there.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I've noticed that.
I don't like it on the phone either, because there's like two passwords.
Have you tried the new one?
Oh no, maybe I need to get the upgrade.
Yeah, so the new one is much better. You have to repurchase it. Okay. But it's much better. And I think they're supposed to be coming out with a new one for the Mac too. And it's also on Windows as well. So
it's for
everybody. Okay. So that would be it. And the other one would be, and I've written about this before, is DevonThink Pro, which is it's like this research tool, but I use it as the way of controlling and managing my paperless stuff. I wrote about this on the HappyCog blog, Cognition, about my paperless trail I have of scanning stuff and saving everything to DevonThink. And it's really good about auto-organizing stuff for you based on the contents of the document. It'll automatically file it for you if it can. And so DevonThink Pro is the hub of everything. If I need to, you know, pull up a document, or a receipt or something like that.
Yeah, I used to use that. I switched to Evernote though, just because I love the cloud. It's just everywhere. I've got it on my iPad, my phone, my computer, on somebody else's computer. I love Evernote.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on. I'm with you there. I sync. DevonThink isn't as good at seamless syncing. I sync it. My database is through Dropbox. But you have to be careful, because if you have they can get corrupted if you're not careful. It's gotten better. But I've gone as far as using Keyboard Maestro on my Mac Pro at home. At every night at, I think, like 2 a.m., it shuts down. It quits DevonThink if it's open. And that way, if I like am working in it at night, like scanning or doing whatever, and then I go to bed and I forget to close it, and I go into work the next day on my laptop and I open it, that I don't have these conflicts or these warnings saying this database is already open. So I've gotten around that a little bit. But yeah, it's not as seamless. They do have an iPhone app and an iOS an iOS app. But it's limited. But I'm so far down that path now that I think I'm
no turning back. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna stick with it.
Cool.
And it's great for research. Like I use their Devon Agent, I think it's called, which is their search tool. And it's built all right in, and it's sort of like, you know, it's a lot like, you know, going into the Apple world, like you're definitely committing to an ecosystem.
Right. Yeah.
And, but I find it to be really worth it, especially if I have to research stuff. It worked out really well.
Cool. Well, I think this is a good time to wrap it up. Why don't you tell people how they can find you, where you exist on the web, and tell them about where Majingo is.
Sure. They can find me at ryanireland.com, ryanireland.com. And I'm the same on Twitter, majingo.com, MIJINGO. And then also, of course, you know, the awesome people here at HappyCog at happycog.com is the place where I do the majority of my work and spend a lot of time. So it's a lot of fun. So yeah, those three places are the best places to go.
Cool. Well, thanks, Ryan. It was great talking to you. I learned a lot about Expression Engine for sure, and about your Majingo project, which sounds awesome. I want to do something like that.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Ryan Ireland for joining us on Non-Breaking Space. As always, check the show notes out at nonbreakingspace.tv for links and sites discussed during the episode. We're also on the iTunes podcast listing, and we'd really appreciate if you subscribed and left a rating or review. It really helps us spread the word about the show. You can follow us on Twitter at NBSPTV, and same thing on Facebook.